Elizabeth Edwards hosted National Public Radio's Morning Edition for 24 and a half years. The show attracted more than 13 million listeners weekly. He joined NPR in 1974 and was co-host of the evening news magazine All Things Considered until 1979, when he helped launch the Morning Edition. Known for his sincerity, intelligence, and wit, Edwards helped build NPR's devoted audience. Bob is now host of The Bob Edwards Show on Sirius XM Radio and Bob Edwards Weekend, distributed to public radio stations. Both programs feature in-depth interviews with newsmakers, journalists, entertainers, and other compelling figures. Edwards was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and began his radio career there. Following service as a broadcaster with the American Forces Korea Network, Edwards moved to Washington, where he worked as an anchorman for WTOP, an all-news CBS affiliate. At age 25, he became a correspondent with the Mutual Broadcasting System. He is the author of several books, Fridays with Red, which chronicled his radio friendship with legendary sportscaster Red Barber, Edward R. Murrow and the Birth of Broadcast Journalism, and now, A Voice in the Box, My Life in Radio, a memoir that shapes a fascinating personal narrative from one of the most iconic personalities in radio history. The book recalls stories from his most memorable interviews, everything from Julia Child's declaration that she preferred quarter pounders to Big Macs, to Norman Mailer admitting he had just fired off a potboiler to pay the bills. Edward also addresses his departure from NPR with an honest, balanced assessment of what happened. Welcome, Bob. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thanks for asking.
Radio is experiencing such a renaissance right now with rockers like Tom Petty, Bob Dylan hosting their own shows. How does radio keep inventing itself?
It has to. Everything keeps changing. It was supposed to die so many times when television came along, when newer technology came along. And we just become a part of it, you know. There's the internet one day. All right, well, we'll just be on the internet. And then iPhones come along. Oh, okay, we'll just incorporate radio into the iPhone. So we're there. We're there in both places. We'll be on your toaster if we're going to be transmitted that way. Whatever it takes, there'll be radio there.
Mm. All right, talking about your very incredible career, talk a little bit about the evolution from, of all things considered, from news program to magazine of the air.
Well, that is what it was supposed to be. That's what the original producers told us they wanted, a magazine of the air. I wasn't all that interested in a magazine of the air. I came from hard news. I came from, you know, the legacy of Edward R. Murrow. I was kind of a prig back then. And I think we kind of compromised. I think I became a lot looser than I was then, a lot more rigid, more open to new ideas, new ways of presenting stories on the radio. And they became much more of a news organization. It happened in pretty much in the 80s when radio was largely deregulated and commercial radio stopped doing news as a result because they didn't have to anymore. So people looking for radio on looking for news on the radio found public radio stations and NPR. And we just grew and grew as a news organization, and they're kind of out there by themselves now.
Waking up at 1 a.m. for 24 years, it took a very tough toll on you and your family. Would you do that again?
I don't think so. I think I did my time. I don't think we're meant to do that. I don't think biologically we are disposed to getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning. The tough part was going to sleep at 6 o'clock at night. My children would read me bedtime stories, which was odd, and then they got to stay up, and I, you know, what's wrong? Something wrong with them. Yes, it's very bad, and I don't think it was good for my health or anything else, but it was a part of doing that program, and I love doing that program.
You say you've calculated that you've interviewed over 30,000 people in your career. That's an amazing achievement. How did you keep each one fresh and unique?
Well, it's you're doing it that day. I mean, even if you're talking to someone you've talked to multiple times before, it's that day and what's happening in their lives that day, what's happening in our country that day. So it was always fresh, particularly when I was doing a news program. I mean, today I'm doing long-form interviews. It's a different thing entirely. It's more of a conversation. It's more in-depth. You're able to tell multiple stories and go in a whole bunch of different directions. You're not just answering the pressing emergency of that day's news. I'm having a lot more fun now than I was back in those news days. This is a lot easier to do.
I've often wondered when you had to ask the really tough questions about scandals and breakups. I mean, how do you develop that tough skin that you need?
I know. Your mama didn't teach you to be that way. Your mama told you to be respectful and not bring up unpleasantness. And that's not what we do in this business. That's our job, to ask the tough questions, to ask the questions that the listener would ask if the listener were there in that chair talking to that person. So you have to. And I figured my guest understood that and would not be granting an interview with me unless they understood that and probably had prepared an answer. And so let's go on and do our business. It's my job to ask the question. It's the guest's job to answer it and mine to follow up when I don't like that answer.
I know that there must have been several times when you've been in an interview and you knew that it was making for really bad radio. What do you do in a case like that?
Well, hopefully you're not live in that case. Yeah, I've had those. I had Andy Warhol, who was in something of a coma. Don't know what he had ingested that day, but I was getting...
Oh, really? I did?
And that was when I could get anything out of him at all. Fortunately, that was taped. Or, in our case, destroyed. But you don't want something like that happening live. So. Andy would have been bad live, I think.
You've written that politicians are kind of the worst group to interview. Why?
Because they're stuck on the message of the day and they don't want to leave it. They're scared to death that you're going to get them off guard and they're going to say something that's going to create problems for them. But I try to disarm them, get them to tell me a personal story about themselves or something, and maybe I can ease them into another area if they're off guard that way. But mostly they're boring and are trying to, you know, fry their fish, and they don't care what you are asking them about at all. So I much prefer writers, musicians, creative people talking about the creative process and expressing themselves in wonderful ways that entertain us.
Is it your opinion that politicians today are so handled and so well rehearsed that you really can't get through to the core of what they truly believe in, just kind of their spiel?
Well, if that were true, then Herman Cain wouldn't be at a microphone.
Touche.
How polished is that? Huh? No, it's not always the guy. I mean, Rick Perry, another one, is, you know, was riding high for so long, and this guy should just not go out there. He figured that out at one point, you know. He just said he wasn't going to do any more of them, and then he comes out and does one, and it's oops. So, I don't know, maybe Rick and Herman should just sit a few of these out.
Who of the Republican crop of hopefuls would you like to have for the interviews?
Herman Cain and Rick Perry.
How different is it working for satellite radio?
I don't think it's the medium that matters so much. It's different in that I don't have member stations as I did with public radio, although I also still do a public radio program, so I'm in both worlds. But I don't get to talk to my satellite listeners the way I do. I don't get to go out and meet them, is what I'm saying, because we don't have stations in satellite radio. So that's kind of weird.
What do you see as the prognosis for public radio?
I love public radio. I think it's a national treasure. I think it's more important than ever, given the shrillness of talk radio and media becoming more partisan. Newspapers in deep trouble and dying off. I think public radio fills a role that's very important, particularly in news, as people struggle to have enough information to make sound decisions and voting, and you know, it's their role in our democracy. So long may it thrive, and I hope public support continues for it, and I think it should.
Your book, A Voice in the Box, it's very compelling reading. How did you decide actually what to put in there over your very, very incredible career?
I just picked the highlights, what people, you know, obviously not, they're not interested in the minutia of my childhood or anything like that, but certain things formed me and I thought they were important and I included them. I guess I left out some personal embarrassments. I think every author, if he's honest, but nothing that, you know, is really of importance to the reader. But, you know, I think I'm very honest about some things. My shortcomings as a broadcaster, things I learned the hard way in radio, not prejudices, but obstacles to my development that I had to overcome and learn to accept. And where I was wrong at NPR and where they were right and when they were wrong and when I was right. I think I was pretty honest and straight up about all of that.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by. The book, A Voice in the Box, is a wonderful, interesting story of your life and an entire industry.
Well, thank you very much. I hope so. I hope it's, you know, people understand it's more than just about me, about things that have gone on in the world and particularly in the media for the last 43 years. So I hope people find something good there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Much.
Thank you.
Much.